Cool. Russell Earnshaw with Clark Laidlaw in your little den in New Zealand. How are you, mate? You well?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Well, good. I'm good. Very Scottish welcome from you. Enjoying that. How's let's go straight in at the deep end then. I've obviously seen you quite a bit, coaching and spent time with you. And how did it all start? Have you got to where you are now? So obviously you're now coaching New Zealand on the World Series. What's the story?
Yeah, a little bit random, I suppose. So when I finished playing rugby development in Scotland, so for my club team, Jed Forrest initially, and then I worked for East Lothian Council just outside of Edinburgh for a year with a sports development team. And that was great for me as a non-qualified coach, I suppose, non-teacher. Came from engineering and playing rugby. So that was good to work with a sports development team that showed me how to organise myself and organise tournaments and get my act together, I suppose, a little bit. And really from there, applied for a job way back in 2000, actually in 2007 initially, and got for a job as a rugby development officer at Taranaki Rugby through Mark Robinson, who was the CEO at the time. And we actually turned the job down at the first year. And then the guy that got the job left a year after. And my wife, Karen, and I were in a slightly different situation. We had our first little girl, and we thought, why not? So we packed up our bags, sold our house, and took off for what we thought would be a year or two, and it's turned into 10. So it's been a bit of a, you know, a bit of a roller coaster, but it's amazing what happens if you just take an opportunity that's in front of you and sort of go for it.
Yeah, so, well, that's a good one. So East Lothian Council obviously doing some pretty cool stuff around developing coaches, engineers into coaches. So then you went over as an RDO, so, and then what's happened since then? How did you get, so you obviously coached some Super Rugby, how did that come about?
Yeah, well, Taranaki at the time was, you know, was a real positive CEO in Mark Robinson, and then a new academy manager, and Mike Collins, who actually played for London Irish and Glasgow and the Chiefs, and you know they were keen to move the union forward. And Colin Cooper came back from the Hurricanes, who'd been head coach at the Hurricanes for 10 years. So I just got involved coaching the academy initially, coaching their sevens team. You know, and through that with the Mitre 10 team, doing skills and some opposition analysis, and really, you know, one thing led to another. Through the sevens, I got involved with Titch and the New Zealand team in 2011 and 12, and you know, had a great time with the team. Team won two World Series, and you know, it was a real positive experience being back involved in sevens after being a player, especially winning a few more games than when I was a player. So, you know, and then from there, really the Hurricanes, Mark Hammett and Alain Meramia were coaching the Hurricanes at the time, and asked me to come down. And again, it was a wee bit, a bit of a leap of faith. Wasn't actually employed between the Hurricanes seasons, so went down there just for basically a 7 or 8 month contract, which turned into 3 years. And you know, done skills 1 year, defence the next year, and backs and attack the third year. So it was a great experience, and I loved working with the Hurricanes, and you know, really did shape a lot of my coaching and how I look at the game, especially, you know, from our 15s and the attacking side of the game as well as the defensive side of the game at the time. So yeah, and then a couple of years in London with London Irish, and again, a few ups and downs. You know, it was a tough year, the first year where we were relegated, and then the second year we managed to get promoted back into the Premiership, you know, and I think it's obviously there for everybody to see. It's difficult, isn't it, to just go up and stay up. And you know, in the back of that, the opportunity came up to come back to New Zealand and get involved with the Sevens as head coach. So it was something I was, you know, quite passionate about. I loved working with the team before. I thought there was opportunity to maybe make a difference and to, you know, to help the team. And you know, family wise, it seemed like a good option. Living in Mount Maunganui instead of London seemed a little bit easier on my commute.
Mount Maunganui over London, although I'm not sure I'd take it over Jed Forrest.
No, well, it's a wee bit similar. It's similar. Slightly warmer in the sea than the North Sea, but yeah, it's going good so far.
Cool. You've given me loads of questions to think of, so I'm gonna I'm going to start at the end. So I'm going to go, well, what difference do you think you've made with the sevens? So obviously you've followed on from Titch, who's won quite a lot of stuff. Clearly you were a big part of that as well. What you've been trying to do? What have you been trying to change? What have you been trying to enhance?
I think, well, the biggest thing in the world of the sevens has changed a lot. You know, in the last 5 years, it's went from, you know, maybe two or three teams that can compete to, I think there's maybe 11 teams won a World Series title, you know. So the game's changed. And I suppose I've tried to bring a more modern slant to how the team prepares and how we train, you know, based off maybe my 15s experiences with both London Irish and the Hurricanes, as well as Taranaki, and how we build our weeks, how we prepare the players, you know, how we integrate skills with conditioning and so on. So it's probably been, you know, I'm a lot younger than Titch, and Titch had a hugely successful era. You know, and his strengths were there for everybody to see around conditioning and nutrition and selection. You know, I think if you get those three things right, then you're off to a pretty good start, aren't you?
Yeah.
So we've tried to continue with that around, you know, being fit and well conditioned and pick good players. And probably the biggest part of the work has been centralising the team and creating a sort of culture and identity that we can really all feel part of, both the players and staff. And as the head coach, I've spent a lot of my time, especially in the first year, really trying to establish that with our senior players and our staff, how we operate as a group, how we try and, you know, work together and have a real purpose to how we want to, you know, work every day and how we live and how we play. I think we're starting to see the benefits of that coming through. Obviously, had a reasonably successful last year with the two pinnacle events and starting to see a bit more consistency right across the board, you know, from how our culture and identity looks. It's getting a bit deeper and a little bit stronger and less clutter, which is quite exciting. And I think the game's the same. I think, you know, a couple of weekends ago in Sydney, we played with a real sort of clarity around how we want to play the game, and you know, we've got a real positive result. But it's probably as well as we've played since I got involved.
What do you mean by less clutter? What are you talking about there?
Oh, trying to do too much, or trying to, you know, sort of force it. We've got some real sort of strong traditions now and around the team, and you know, training weeks or pre-departure weeks or actual weeks. We're really clear on sort of the pillars that underpin the team around, you know, we've got, I suppose, a little performance triangle that we try and stick to around our fun and connection and as men and as people. We try and have a real edge and a growth sort of mindset to try and improve. And another angle is really sort of focused work. So when we get all three humming, it's just, you know, we talk about the sweet spot around that, and we're getting players that can flick between the three sides quickly. You know, we're getting an environment that can flick from having fun and be connected and sing and laugh, but quickly flick the switch if it needs to, if things aren't good enough, or quickly switch, you know, switch to doing some good hard work.
Yeah, I'm always excited when performance environments are talking about fun, and I've definitely, I can see that in how you guys are playing, and I'm hearing some real positive stuff around the cultural advances you've been making. I always, Banjo always tells the story of seeing the Kiwis doing the hill runs before Hong Kong 1 year, a day before, and then thinking, geez, like, we're not fit enough. I remember being there, it was about 2 days before a tournament, you were probably there, and it was on the training pitch next to the main stadium, and it was a couple of days before the tournament, and the lads were still doing 100 metres.
Mm.
It was hot. And I was thinking, wow, how are you guys going to... And I'm assuming you did pretty well in the tournament, so it was always there.
Yeah, well, I remember Hong Kong the year we won with Titch. I walked out, we were playing our 10th game, which was the final, because we trained in the morning of the first day, then we had an activation, which was basically another game, which we'd done each day. So it worked out, I think we were playing about our 10th game by the time we played the final. I suppose that's where the game has changed a bit. You know, before New Zealand, Fiji, would, you know, basically use the group games to get ready for a quarter final or a semi, you know, and sometimes even just a semi and a final. But, you know, looking ahead, say for us, we've been in groups this year already with Samoa and South Africa in our group.
Yeah.
So you need to save a little bit in the tank these days, make sure you sort of front load your training blocks and try and freshen up a wee touch, so because you do have to go pretty deep. Could be on game one, day one. You know, if you go in a hole, you know what it's like. If you go in a hole in sevens, it's difficult to come back out of it. So,
yeah,
that's probably a slight change. We don't do quite as grueling as sessions when we're away, but we're certainly training hard when we're at home.
Yeah, I watch it now, and I mean, it's a different game. And actually, as you said, you know, it seems like Canada can beat anyone on their day. USA are clearly doing really, really well. You know, Spain have started to pick up some results. Samoa with Ticha, you know, starting to maybe hit some quarters and, you know, throw in England, South Africa, Fiji. It's like, it's incredible. I always think Fiji should win every tournament, though. So I always think you've got, you know, some pretty skillful players there. If you play to your full potential, you'd be pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, well, I think us and Fiji are, you know, have traditionally been the two strongest teams. And you're right, when Fiji are really on, you know, when you watch them play in the final against the USA in Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, you sort of think, how do you beat them? And there is days like that. I remember with New Zealand, the last time we once got beat by 40-odd points in Twickenham. And it felt like a tsunami coming towards you. It felt like there was nothing you could actually do that day to stop it.
Yeah.
So I think that humility needs to be pretty strong. Some days you just have to accept that and, you know, find a way the next time you play them, because there is opportunities in the game if you get your game going. You know, as we've proved over the last year, we can win big games against them, and we think we've got the game to trouble them too. But, you know, they're a hell of an ugly team.
And what do you think Clarkey's bringing as a head coach? So clearly you've been... You coached back and attack at Irish. You were previously, you know, doing lots of stuff with the sevens, but not being the main man. How's that transition been? What's different? What are you loving about it? Yeah, just talk to some of the differences between being a head coach and an assistant.
Oh, I think the easiest way to describe it is I used to have a lot of opinions. Now I have to make a lot of decisions. So as an assistant, you know, I'm reasonably strong-minded and like to give opinions and you know, try and influence how we train, how we select teams, how we prepare, you know, what we look like. And I guess once you're the head coach, you need to be able to take opinions and listen to people and create an environment where everybody can have their, you know, have their say, whether it's fitness trainers or physios or, you know, sports scientists or, you know, assistant coaches, nutritionists, and etc. But ultimately, try and shape that into an environment that, you know, works for your team, works for the group of players you've got, because not all environments are the same, not all groups of players are the same. You know, and I think as a head coach, that's the sort of art of it is taking those opinions and ideas and shaping it into an environment that really works for your group, because, you know, sevens is different to 15s. New Zealand players are different to English players or Samoan players, or you know, and I think that's been a good challenge for us, because we've now got a group, especially the sevens, we've got three or four staff that have worked in Super Rugby, and just because ideas or certain processes or structures or work in Super Rugby, they don't necessarily directly transfer into sevens, either due to the different type of game, different types of players, different numbers, you know, simple things like traveling with 13 players, so you don't even have enough to play 7-on-7.
Are you still joining in training?
No. Tomasi Thama jumps in, so he's certainly in better condition and far closer to being able to still play than me. So
I think it was still about 2010 when I could no longer join in training.
Yeah, well, I was probably the same. I basically finished playing in 2008, so that was, I haven't done much rugby since.
So knowing what you know now as a head coach, what would you, was there anything you'd do differently as an assistant? Anything you'd, or your advice to assistant coaches or?
Oh, I think that I'd be a better assistant coach. because I would understand, you know, if I'm venting or get frustrated at something and I put that under the head coach, what that can, you know, that can affect his thinking or put him under pressure when he potentially doesn't need it.
Nice.
So I think, you know, having a bit more patience and a bit more understanding of what a head coach, you know, you get phone calls or emails about everything and anything. People trying to speak to you around random stuff from, you know, when you train to training fields to Super Rugby, you know, to All Blacks to, you know, and everything in between. So I certainly think it would make me a far better assistant coach, you know, to assist and support a head coach now going forward.
Yeah, and obviously you've referenced some of the coaches you've hung around with. Tell me about some of the coaches over the years, some of the best bits, I guess, that you've garnered or you've added or you've, you know, who've you enjoyed working with. I'm sure we'll speak a little bit about Irish and as part of that as well.
Well, I think I've been massively lucky to, when I think all the coaches I've worked with since I came to New Zealand especially, I'm not sure there could have been any different. So if you go from Colin Cooper, who had 10 years at the Hurricanes, who probably influenced me as a young, I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but bullish sort of Scotsman that, you know, didn't have enough patience when I started, either with, you know, getting things done or wanting things to be better. And off the field, you know, Coops is, I don't know if you ever met Colin Cooper, but he's got great patience. He's a great listener. He's always calm. Very rarely do I hear him raise his voice, you know, at staff or at players. So he had a massive influence as a young, you know, coach going from coaching kids to coaching men. And probably had the biggest influence on me, as I say, transitioning from coaching under 16s, 18s into coaching men. Because, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
And then to go to the, you know, I went to work with Titch, who, as I say, done things his own way, but, you know, had some real pillars around what he knew made a good sevens team, or what, you know, what he wanted, which was be fit, have great nutrition, and he was an outstanding selector. And I remember him talking to me around Charles Pieter one day. It was at a camp in October, and he said, "What do you think of this kid, Pieter?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, he looks all right." And I was like, "He said, oh, I offered him a contract yesterday." I was like, "Wow, that's pretty quick. Well, you what? He's going to be good." You know,
it's currently earning £1 million a year at Bristol. So,
well, that's right. And Charles was a great young player to work with. So, you know, and then Mark Hammett probably opened my eyes to culture and identity and traditions and how you try and build an environment that has real detail around performance and getting better. You know, around planning your weeks and individual plans, and you know, he was massive on that identity and having fun, and learned a huge amount of Hammer. And you know, then Chris Boyd and John Plumtree came into the Hurricanes, and again it was completely different, two totally different personalities, but probably not as much about the game.
Yeah.
They were, you know, real tacticians and really opened up my eyes, you know, Boydie around the attacking side of the game, and Plums had been a head coach for years. It was just, you know, it was great just to sit in behind those boys and watch to see how they ran the team. And
what type of stuff was Boydie talking about with attack? What influenced you? Because obviously he's over at Saints now and trying to move their game on definitely from an attacking point of view. What type of?
Oh, I just manipulating D and you know, grouping D or spreading it or different, you know, attacking shapes dependent on, you know, fast ball or gain line, what type of style you want to play, you know, what's more important, is it gain line, is it fast ball, you know, the easy answer is both, but, you know, playing off 9 and playing off 10, you know, really, you had a real clear idea. And, you know, I think at the Hurricanes at the time, we were starting to expand playing, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 different phase attack shapes. And I keep starting to think now, you know, I love my football at the minute. I'm reading about Guardiola, and some of the managers have 26 different formations they've tried. And I watch a lot of rugby, and it looks they've got one formation and that's it.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking to myself, there must be there must be opportunities to change that. And the challenge Boyd will have in England will be, the pressure that comes from playing in a league that the Premiership's like, how competitive is, and relegation and so on, that everybody knows what pressures that build around actually developing your game and being able to play a different style than maybe the team's played in the past. So,
I mean, and I imagine also, the skill set of some of his players will also be a limiting factor. What, how did that compare? So when you were at Irish, what was the, is it a big difference? Do you feel it? Do you notice it?
I certainly do in hindsight. We certainly didn't get it right the year we got relegated. And looking back now, a far simpler approach to start it, and really getting an understanding, where the players were at. The easy example is sometimes change. Some things you don't think are different were. So say the breakdown as an example. So what we seen as the breakdown and what we thought was normal around clearing bodies and what fast ball might look like wasn't necessarily what the game looked like in England.
Yeah.
Or what those players, thought. So I guess we created more change than we even thought we did.
Yeah. You weren't aware of where they were. So you weren't aware of which...
And watching footage on computers and looking at the game and watching the Premiership and we watched a lot of Irish's games. But we tried not to be constrained on what had happened in the past and tried to move the team forward, but potentially try to move it too quickly.
So you obviously got to hang out with guys like Deck and Dodge and Nick Kennedy. What did you learn from those guys?
The second year was probably one of my more enjoyable years working in rugby. I can genuinely say that, working with those fellas, and we keep in touch, and they are sort of positivity led by Brendan Venter, who came in and tried to set up the club that year. Those guys' enthusiasm, the way they wanted to present, the way they wanted to share information with the players, whether it be quizzes or videos or funny stories, was really good. And something that still influences the way I try and present to our players here. And I know they've all sort of went in sort of different directions, but, I think if you look at the young players that's come through there in the last 2, 3, 4 years, I think you can see their influence. And as I say, I genuinely like to keep in touch with them and talk about the game and talk about how they're going. And it was an enjoyable year. They had a great attitude, the three of them.
Yeah, they're really good guys. Which players have influenced you? So obviously lots of coaching stuff. I'm definitely going to explore Colin Cooper. Which players have influenced you? Where's there been some moments with players that's helped Clark Laidlaw get to where he is?
Yeah, well, working especially with the teams I've worked with, we've been lucky to work with exceptional rugby players. Guys, I suppose initially at the Sevens would have been guys like Tomasi Thama and DJ Forbes and Lottie Rakan-Bulla were sort of the three senior boys in that team. And I guess the way they embraced what I was trying to do and helped me influence the team had a long-lasting effect, how responsive they were to me working with them, because the three of them had probably beat me by 60 points as a player. And he was trying to tell them how to catch, pass and tackle and do their skills. So, that always stuck with me, how open they were.
Yeah. Obviously, every player I coach practically is going to be better than me. So
you are a bit the same.
Quite a hard start point, isn't it, to start?
Yeah, well, it was. I can remember how nervous I was. I can remember how nervous I was when I went to the Hurricanes and had to sort of present on how I thought I was going to take their skill development forward. And guys like a Conrad Smith and Jeremy Thrush, Dane Cole, some of the senior boys that were involved with the team then. Again, their enthusiasm, I suppose, to get better, is probably, I think that's the biggest influence.
Yeah,
nice. And probably the biggest enjoyment with working with any player is is their enthusiasm to get better. Somebody like a Conrad Smith, who was, you know, 30, I don't know what Conrad was, 33 maybe, 32.
Yeah.
It was 2013, you know, a couple of years ago to the World Cup. I can still remember him coming into my office and saying, you know, I want to look at my game. Can you go through my game and let's pick two or three things I think I can need to work on and get better at? And I was almost blown away.
Yeah.
You know, and guys like, you know, I've worked with Bodie Barrett since he was 17 and, you know, watch him develop through Taranaki into the Hurricanes, and obviously the All Blacks gives you, you know, you play a small part in that. But and then now guys, you know, back in the sevens, a guy like a Tim Mickelson.
Oh mate, he's ridiculous, isn't he?
Well, and it's his enthusiasm. The first day I met him, he had it at the top of his new era, how good can I be? And I was like, man, I can work with you, if that's your attitude. you know, and he comes to training every day. He just set a new sevens record for old Bronco just after Christmas. So he missed the first two tournaments having a baby. And he rocks up day one after Christmas and sets a new sevens record. So those types of players, you know, they're the ones that get you out of your bed in the morning and get you excited around you trying to get better, and you try and deliver a program that can help those guys.
Yeah, Tim Mickelson is like, he's just really effective, isn't he? He wouldn't necessarily look like the orthodox player. Yeah, I imagine Bowden Barrett was pleased the first day he met you and you told him you're going to be as good as Clark Laidlaw one day, Bowden
Barrett. Yeah, I'm not sure that was my first chat. I can remember watching him though when they were kids, him and his brothers, and you know, I was blown away with what you could see across all their family. They were an exceptional, you know, group of boys, and you know, three of them are All Blacks. Probably didn't quite think that when you first seen them, but gee whiz, they've been another outstanding rugby players and great family.
Yeah, he played in, I think it was a 2011 20s World Cup final, and he probably made more mistakes than anyone else on the pitch, but he was just like pushing the boundaries of what was possible in the game, which I love. Glenn Delaney talks about, and when we did the pod with Glenn as well, spoke a lot about, in New Zealand, the players want to own their own decisions. They're much more in charge of their own learning, you know, coming to you, how can you help, you know, that type of stuff. Mm. Which obviously, you know, tends to fuel my biases. I mean, what have you noticed? If you could say, look, here's the two or three things that I've noticed is a difference between New Zealand and England, both ways. So what's been maybe good about the England stuff as well? What are the big rocks in those areas?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me was, just because they're different, it doesn't mean they're good and bad. So the styles of rugby are different. But, you know, I think when you watch test match rugby, you see by the time it all gets to the top, it's pretty even. And obviously New Zealand plays slightly different to England, we play different to Ireland. But it's something I've definitely enjoyed coming back to England and coaching in England was the way they looked at the game, how much detail you need to try and improve your players. Now, they probably want, you know, maybe too much detail to the point where that's what they're thinking about, as opposed to expressing themselves.
Yeah.
I think New Zealand players want enough detail, you know, we sort of say, you know, the structure is really to create the unstructure. Yeah. So New Zealand players want structure just so they can break the game open and then express themselves. You know, now if that's one phase, two phase, three phase, then it doesn't really matter. You know, if it's on for a crossfield kick, or there's space in behind, or, you know, there's space in front of them, then they're really willing to take that. And, you know, Glenn's right around, they really want to be able to own making decisions, and if it's on and they feel it's on. And they're certainly optimistic. I can still remember a Hurricanes game. We were on our own line and I knew they were going to run it. I could see Nehe Milner-Scudder was eyeing up a short side off a scrum on a left-hand side. And I said in the box, and they were like, no, surely not. And sure enough, we did. And we actually got turned over and the Waratahs scored at the other end. But just it was that risk and reward, you know. It was, and I think that's what you have to always weigh up with New Zealand players. If they get the context around risk and reward, and then, you know, once they mature into, you know, adult players and that, then they really understand that, and that's what makes them so exciting and so dangerous. And I think that's the, you know, the biggest difference for me, I suppose, as a Scotsman too, let alone you know, working in England, is that a real optimism to play? You know, and what they perceive as success in a game, you know, around performance and how they play. And it starts at a young age, the expectation to play good rugby and, you know, keep the ball in hand is there. It doesn't really matter if you're a school team or a provincial team or a sevens team or a super rugby team. And the expectation to win is kind of similar to that. It doesn't actually matter if you're a school team or a club team or a provincial team or a super rugby team. There's a real expectation that you'll play well and, you know, and try and win. And I think, you know, as I say, growing up in Scotland, you know, through the 80s, maybe Scotland had that, but for a long time we lost that. It became about competing, and especially at the top end of the game. But even at the expectations to really play good rugby was sort of lost. And I think it's getting back, isn't it? You know, Gregor and through Scottish rugby and the provincial game and through into the under 20s and so on, is, you know, the penny's dropped it, moving the ball and using the ball. And so I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's as big a difference between North and South. I think the best players still want to take ownership. I think the best English players want to learn and want to get better and want, you know, information. I think of the, you know, the good young boys at London Irish were exactly like that. They were no different to the young Kiwi players. But I think everybody buys into that here. I think everybody buys into, you know, producing players that can really take ownership of the game, really shape how they want to play the game that week, the tactics and, you know, the decisions within it. They take a real ownership.
Good description. Fletch asked me a little bit about well-being. So clearly it's a big thing over here with sport and kids and that type of stuff. I mean, how are you, you know, so let's look at your current environment. What's the type of stuff that you think's helping the players with their well-being?
Well, I think having a positive environment helps. You know, so if you create a culture that, you know, everybody's happy to be vulnerable, and we spend a lot of time with the players off the field, one-on-ones, and making sure, you know, that we're there to support them. I think the easiest thing in rugby is to look at the on-field, and we spend a lot of time trying to improve players. You know, always, if somebody can't catch and pass, then we'll spend hours trying to help them. But if they've got some issues off the field, it sometimes becomes, you know, quickly too hard. So, you know, for our environment, we don't have the luxury of 40, 50 players. We can't go and get, you know, numerous sevens players, because it's a tough environment for us to go and get good young players. So really my job, and you know, we've got sports psychologists, we have a personal development manager who looks at all their off-field and making sure they're doing PD. We have a growth day on a Wednesday that's totally assigned to off-field and making sure they're doing, you know, other things away from the game. So it's hugely important that, you know, you spend time with your players and show them support, not only on the field, but off the field. And, you know, I think our players are really responding to that. We've got a few players here that, you know, didn't quite make it in other environments or in 15s, and they're starting to thrive in this environment because, you know, I think we've created an environment that they can be themselves. You know, they can express their own culture and their own way of doing things, as long as it fits in with what we're trying to do with the team. I think, you know, we're having definite, you know, benefits around boys being happy, and because, you know, professional sport, there's pressure and there's big games and there's wins and losses, but, you know, ultimately the sun comes up in the morning and you move on, and you know, it's we want to win. You know, I coach a New Zealand national team, and bloody important we try and win, and we'll never shy away from that. But, you know, I think we create an environment that is really positive and really optimistic, and, you know, as I say, it's vulnerable to say if you're not okay and you need help off the field, then, you know, we can make a difference.
Nice. What and have you on your travels, and imagine you're racking up a fair few air miles. Have you been to any other environments that you would say, oh, I would recommend that place, or, you know, I would recommend that person, or I've seen some stuff here that would be interesting for people to explore?
Oh, not in the last wee while. I've been so busy, so busy working. It's on my to-do list in the after July. So,
nice.
You know, I think the biggest thing is seeing other people coach. I love watching any sport. You know, when I was younger, I went to judo with the Scottish Institute of Sport. I went to curling with the Scottish Institute of Sport. I've been to cycling here. And just watching how other people, you know, run their environments, and you know, we've had all coaches come in. We've had, and it's just really chewing the fat. You know, it's like speaking to people like you, and just having conversations around what's happening. There's obviously, you know, there's thousands of podcasts. I listened to a great podcast, the guy John Donovan from AT&T, the telecommunications company in America, and he talks about his leadership and. He's had a real effect on some of my thinking recently. So I think
what did he talk about? How did he affect you?
Oh, mate, it's... he talks about his purpose and, you know, as a professional coach, a lot of the time you spend thinking... Well, I spend a lot of time away from home and I'm at the other side of the world. So there's always a trade-off between your family and you know, your passion for a job. And he talked around, you know, how he sort of made it easy at that around it's what he's good at and sort of changed how he parented and made sure the time he had at home was better. And certainly something I'm trying to improve is the time you spend at home and the time you transition out and then transition back in. And, you know, there's plenty of red flags around that as a professional coach. He talked about making change, you know, pain and suffering. Unconditional love and deep meaningful purpose was how he talked about making change, and it really struck a chord with us with our team that, you know, we'd had a fair bit of pain and suffering since 2016. So making change was easy, you know, the first year, because, you know, the team was hurting, the players were hurting. We wanted to centralise the team, we wanted to be better. It was relatively easy for me to come in some ways and make change. But now we're in a different situation, so we need to get really clear on our deep purpose as a group and what it means for us to play for this team and represent this team. And, you know, it's something we spend a lot of time and, you know, we genuinely talk around the love within the team and within the players and the playing group and the management. And, you know, it's something, you know, we're quite proud of is how tight we've got off the field as a group.
Would be using very similar language to you and would be putting a lot of intention around off-field stuff to help support on-field catch pass. So I agree with you that, you know, maybe that player can't catch and pass because something's going on somewhere else. And how do you know what's going on in one's head unless you start asking questions and connecting and being vulnerable with them?
That's right. And, you know, we won a semi-final in Dubai a few weeks back, a couple of months ago, and we defended against England for 3 minutes, 20 seconds, I think it was, after the hooter. Now, 9.9 times out of 10, you lose that game. But how the players talked after and what they talked about around their why and what it meant to them to defend that line, you know, showed us, I think, we're on the right track around, you know, building that culture and team spirit.
I think I'd like to be coached by you, Clarkey. Maybe not with Jed Forrest, but definitely.
No, I've certainly changed, you know, as a coach and a guy over the last 10 years.
Kids helps, doesn't it?
Well, it does. It gives you perspective. You know, we're talking about Tim Mickelson. It gives you perspective around. You know, it is just a game. It's a great game, and it's hugely important in our life because we're massively passionate about it. You know, and ultimately, you know, we do a job we love. We're the lucky ones, really. But keeping it in perspective and making sure you enjoy your days and you have a load of fun and a load of banter, and I think it's massively important. It has to be.
Cool, mate. I've got a few quick fires. Do you read much? Have you read any books recently that are worth recommending? You a reader?
Oh, The Ideal Team Player was one I read. I'm reading Pochettino's book at the minute, the Tottenham manager, The Ego is the Enemy.
Books for fun.
So yeah, with time constraints, I like listening to either podcasts or reading articles, you know, or the shortened versions of books that gives you enough information that stimulates some talking and thinking.
Yeah. What's the best film you've seen? Because you're on a lot of flights. What's the best film you've seen? I'm assuming you're in first class while the players are at the back.
We always text the boys to say some of the, what was the movie night was the last one I watched on the last flight I was on. Is it movie night or game night?
Not sure. Okay.
So, I'm not a huge film. I'm getting Netflix at the minute. I've been watching a few. Is it Bodyguard? Watch the Bodyguard on Netflix. It was obviously in the UK, so
yeah.
That was a nice thing watching Netflix.
Have you seen Sunderland Till I Die? So
I've watched two episodes. I've just started watching it.
Oh mate, how good is it?
Yeah, it's some of the Kiwi boys have just watched it. They're like, "Is that for real?"
You saying, "Yeah, that's what it was like in Scotland." King of the Borders, Sevens. I'm going to do a quick one. I'm going to give you something. You got one word to describe, all right? One word to answer back. Family.
Love.
Conrad Smith.
Competitive.
Tomasi Karma.
Genius.
Genius. He's a freaking genius. Yeah. Rugby.
Passion.
New Zealand.
The beach.
Scotland.
Home.
England.
The enemy.
You only have one word. I'll take
that. Actually, one of my daughters was born in England, so it's it's far closer to my heart now than it was.
You're the one who lives in the shed in the garden.
Yeah, we've actually adopted her out for the next wee while. But
Sevens.
Intense.
Fifteens.
Too complicated.
I agree. Titch.
Strong.
Yeah.
Strong-willed.
Yeah. I've never seen a man so... I mean, those poor people in the hotels in Vegas with the nutrition. I was last one, yeah. Colin Cooper.
Influence.
Nice. Mate, I've loved that. I mean, I would want to be coached by you now. Yeah, that's my litmus test. Would I want my kids to be coached by you? I think I would let them coach you. I think I would let them coach them. Yeah, mate, really appreciate your time. And good luck with the rest of it. And obviously, everything that's coming up for the Sevens. So have fun and we'll catch up soon.
No, I appreciate that, mate. Good to catch up. Bloody good.
Cheers, bye.
All good. Cheers, bye.